Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Dan, the Charlie Kirk Show. Blaze Media has a new look. Caroline Glick joins the program about how should Israel handle the Hamas terrorist situation. And finally, Speaker Mike Johnson, initial reaction. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. And become a member, charliekirk.com, and click on the Members tab. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. One of the most important organizations on the right is The Blaze, and it has a new look, a new approach, and a new editor-in-chief, Matthew Peterson, who has been on our program many times. Matt, congratulations. Tell us all about it.
Thank you, Charlie. It's a pleasure to be here today. Big day for Blaze. I mean, this week we're ripping off the Band-Aid and going to subscribers only. There'll be no advertising on our site, and if you're like me, you know, it's like eye cancer looking at these things with the toe fungus ads and all this. And all that is big tech. I mean, all of that is being used to demonetize us anyway. So we're going straight to the people, subscriber content. We're going to do a lot more of it.
Yeah. So tell us more about kind of the new look, the new approach. And I mean, that's a risky model, right? Because, you know, paywalls, not everyone's going to be able to access it. So walk us through the approach here.
Yeah, well, first off, I mean, aesthetics matter. You talk about this, Charlie. I mean, I feel like a lot of times on the right, these big media outfits, don't get me started on the biggest one, don't respect their audience. And we wanted to create something beautiful and then rely directly on the people. And if you go to the Blaze, you know, go to blaze.com, you'll see this is a beautiful new website. It's clean. It respects its audience. It's beautiful. And we're just going right to the people and saying, support us, subscribe. And we're talking $3 a month to support real journalism that we're going to expand into all these areas that the right doesn't even usually talk about, you know, like lifestyle, sports, I mean, all that sort of thing. And I just got sick of, as you know, a lot of people not doing it, not doing what they should, not really doing the deal, not really serving the audience. And we're going to serve the audience, and we have faith that they will respond in kind.
Yeah, talk about the conservative kind of media landscape, or conservative is quite a term for it. But, you know, there's the big uglies, I'm not going to say any names, they tend to be farther and farther away from the people that they monetize, the audience, that there is an agenda that is incongruent with the people that they need to keep on purchasing the ads or the eyeballs. Do you think that's sustainable? And what are you at The Blaze seeking to do about this opportunity?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm so excited to talk about this. It's as if I've been waiting my whole life for this moment. I mean, as you know, the big dogs aren't doing the deal. And they're even as bad as people in the House are, you know, there's decent Republicans who don't even want to talk to a certain news channel anymore.
That's correct.
That got rid of the most, you know, famous, the most successful guy on broadcast TV and news was Tucker Carlson. And he was, you know, they just got rid of him as if it was nothing. That's because they don't actually agree with their audience. The people running the show, the actual people who own the company, right, don't agree with the audience. They're just trying to make money. I think that era is over. People are hip to it. They're wise to it. and they do not want that garbage anymore. They're starving for people who really care and are really trying to do something, whether that's in, you know, in business or activism. And, you know, that's why people support you, Charlie Kirk. I mean, they're looking for people who are actually going to lead. I am here only because I am convinced that we have that team at the top. And if we go direct to the audience with what they really want and deserve, we're all going to win and be better for it.
Yeah, and there's this untapped potential out there of content that aesthetically is very pleasing. And I know you use that word beautiful. You and I both know what that means in the classical sense. That is what that which is perfected in being. The audience might just think, oh, you're going to have good-looking people. That's not what it really means, right? It's understanding that we live in an ugly society with an increasingly ugly flow of imagery, videos, language. Dare I say that the news content and the cultural content that is being pushed forward is filled more in the profane than the holy. Just kind of take a step back, you know, Matt, and talk from a classical perspective. What is beautiful and why should we try to create things that point upwards?
Yeah, well, you know, truth, goodness, and beauty, right? The truth is being as known. The good is being as desired. What's this beauty thing? And it's when we really experience both. We take pleasure in seeing beautiful things. And when we use that word, what we mean are things that are ordered, that are perfected, as I think you said. And that's important because the medium is the message. I mean, if you really have something important to say, right, you need all those things to work together. If you really respect the audience, you need those things to work together because we're trying to lift you up to the truth. We're trying to help you find what's truly good that's going to help you in your life. We're going to do lifestyle content. We're already doing it. And when we do that, we're just going to explore, hey, how should I live in this you-know-what show of a world in the 21st century? How do I live a decent life? How do I find a decent spouse? How do I raise my kids in this world? Then you know you can't trust the experts, right? Who's actually trying to do something that's good, that's healthy, that's fitting, that builds civilization rather than tears it down? And so if you're exploring that issue for real, then all the way you present it is going to change. You're not going to be degrading human beings and degrading the audience by searching for clicks in that way. And I give you just one example today. I mean, Angel Fire is this beautiful short story by the extremely talented novelist and journalist Walter Kern. And that's on the site in, you know, a beautiful, beautiful format. This is the kind of thing that we're going to do. And I'm so happy to actually be doing it, right? because there, unfortunately, there's not a lot of other outlets who are.
Yeah, and so it's this amazing opportunity because on the left, there are no lack of, you know, The Atlantic, Vox Media that try to get into some of this. But because of their value system, despite the talent, they end up having actually really high IQ writers and people that are publishing that actually end up saying really ugly things. And it's really a tragedy, right? I mean, sometimes I'll read the New York Times and just from their diction to their syntax to how they're able to form arguments, it's actually, you could tell they have talent, but their value system prevents them from actually pursuing things that are good, true, and beautiful. This is the built-in institutional advantage of the right, which is that we can go wherever the truth leads us. We don't have to pander to some sort of silly, fake, synthetic regime or kind of, you know, standard that is against the natural law. Riff on that a little bit, Matt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is what's lacking. I mean, what's lacking even on the right sometimes is this understanding you're articulating, which is that, you know, there is no identity that we need to wrap ourselves in, no like subgroup and clique we need to wrap. What's true, good, and beautiful is always out there. It reflects itself differently in different ages with different people and different eras when you pursue those things. But you have to understand that what you're doing. What's the goal? What's the purpose? And if the purpose is to uncover and expose the truth, and that's the guide, right, the surest guide in this business, then all of a sudden you have a sort of natural defense all the time. And you know, the truth is sometimes ugly, but you have your purpose. And that guides the rest of what you do. And, you know, if you don't even understand, if you think in your little childish head that there's no such thing as truth, there's no such thing as goodness, you know, nothing's really good, everyone disagrees on what good and evil are, then you become a very uninteresting person. And the sort of opinions you have are malleable, will just change. You know, if you don't really think, well, what is the truth? You know, we sort of, then you don't have those principles. You will end up making crap, even if you're talented. And that's what you have a lot of yes. now. You have very talented people, as you said, who don't, they're not guided by a higher purpose.
Yes.
And you know, you can't get good stuff out of that.
Yeah,
it's like an equation.
The Greeks had a word, telos, for that. Matt, in closing, how can people support The Blaze and become a member?
Hey, just go to theblaze.com. You go to Blaze Media's website and you just check it out, and it'll walk you through. Very easy to sign up. Throw $3 a month down. Get us off of big tech and censorship and just enjoy the content.
Theblaze.com. Matt, congratulations. Come on again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Listen, as students begin heading back to school, do you think they'll be learning about the founding principles that made America the freest, most prosperous nation in history? Will they learn that our unalienable rights are God-given and not granted by government? Will they be given a full and honest account of our nation's history? The answer to all these questions is yes for students at Hillsdale College. And these days, in addition to teaching college students, Hillsdale has extended its teaching to K-12 students and lifelong learners like you and me. If you're not doing so already, one of the best ways to start learning from my friends at Hillsdale is through InPrimus, Hillsdale's free digest of liberty. My listeners can sign up for free at this special website, which is available for a limited time. It's at charlie4hillsdale.com. I look forward to InPrimus each month, and you can too. It's interesting, useful, and free, the best and smartest in conservative constitutionalist thought. Find out more about Hillsdale and InPrimus at charlie4hillsdale.com. They're an excellent college, America's greatest college, charlie4hillsdale.com. There is a chance that Mr. Johnson from Louisiana ends up getting more votes than Kevin McCarthy did. The roll call is underway, and you know they're going around, and the Democrats are screaming like children. But just based on a little litmus test, based on the tribal leaders, elders, you could say, Gates, Gallagher, the moderates, the neocons, Gates on the Freedom Caucus wing, they're all behind Johnson. We're not seeing any defections at all. There might be some not present, but it looks as if Mike Johnson is going to become Speaker of the House. And that is a major victory for the American grassroots and the conservative grassroots. But it's important now that we have a legislative reset and have very specific goals, and that it's not just a new speaker, but also business as usual is changed. That's the most important thing. We're not going to do this massive CR. We're not going to just pile all this money into a continuing resolution. And it's also rather remarkable, this historic deal, because typically there is a next man up type process. So you get rid of McCarthy, so you think, okay, it's going to be Scalise, or it's going to be Emmer, or it's going to be, was Mike Johnson a chairman of any committee? Maybe he was. I don't know. Was he a chairman of any committee? Certainly not of judiciary. He was the vice chair of the Republican conference. So that's like sixth or seventh in command. That's hardly in charge of the whole deal. And it's hilarious to me, just to be honest, that other guys that were so ambitious, that were so corrupt, that cut so many deals, that lived in D.C., that dreamed of having their speaker portrait, that the backbencher, who, by the way, he was a former radio guy, so my instinct was actually right. Mike Johnson did host a radio show in Louisiana. The guy that was just kind of there to fulfill the mandate of his voters, listen to his voters, kind of a policy wonk guy, and he just kind of waited his turn. If you would have told Mike Johnson in January, you're going to be Speaker of the House before the end of the calendar year, he'd say, what kind of mushrooms are you on? Think about that. I mean, it would be conceivable, like, okay, maybe Emmer, or maybe Scalise, or maybe Stefanik, or maybe any one of these people, maybe Jordan. Mike Johnson? In some ways, it's very similar in the American Civil War when a president comes in and just fires all the generals, and then it's just kind of this colonel, and he's like, you're up. Start winning some battles. Win us the war. He's the least experienced speaker in 140 years. That sounds very promising. Some reporters are going up. They say, what do you have to say for Mike Johnson's inexperience? I think it's awesome. I think his inexperience is a strategic advantage to get stuff done for the American people. I think that his inexperience, as they call it, is going to give him a hand up. It's a virtue. So let me get this straight. Mike Johnson doesn't have any favors that he has to repay. Mike Johnson doesn't have any deals that he had to cut. Mike Johnson doesn't have any looming blackmail that we know of from the intel agencies that will control him. It is the closest to, let's just open the phone book and pick somebody in the House of Representatives and see if this person can become Speaker. He's a super grassroots patriotic conservative who also has gone above and beyond to win friends, yes, both in the Democrat conference and the Republican conference, on a human level. And he didn't do it to try to, like, one day climb the ranks of the ladder. He did it because, based on all accounts, he is a decent person. He's measured. He's methodical. He's humble. He's a gentleman. And he's the closest thing to an accidental speaker that we will ever see in American history. Someone who becomes Speaker of the House, it's typically a product of decades-long plotting, deceit, deals, favors, and it's a culmination of, not celebration of, hey, time to pay off the people who got you there. He is the Brock Purdy of the Republican Party. Seemingly Mr. Irrelevant, the last chosen in the NFL draft, and pops up as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. When the government used emergency edicts during COVID to restrict the gathering and worship of churches, three pastors facing the risk of imprisonment, unlimited fines, and their own churches being ripped apart, took a courageous stand and reopened their doors in the face of a world that chose to comply. The Essential Church is a feature-length documentary that explores the struggle between the church and government throughout history. The story uncovers those who have sacrificed their lives throughout history for what they believe in. Rediscover why the church is essential and how we prove this stand remains true from a scientific, legal, and most importantly, a theological and biblical perspective. This is not your typical movie. It will change your life. You need to see this movie with your family and friends. The Essential Church is streaming today exclusively at salemnow.com. That's Essential Church Movie streaming at salemnow.com. That is salemnow.com. Check out The Essential Church Movie. It's terrific. So go to salemnow.com right now. Joining us now is Caroline Glick, Senior Contributing Editor at the Jewish News Syndicate and also host of The Caroline Glick Show. Caroline, thank you so much for taking the time. My first question is, I know you wrote a whole piece on this. Why do you believe that Israel has not yet invaded Gaza now that we are coming on 3 weeks post the massacre in Israel?
I think the main reason is operational, that we wanted to get all of our ducks lined up and we want to soften the targets more, because Hamas's fighters are almost all in this warren of underground tunnels. There are about 500 kilometers of tunnels underneath the ground in Gaza. Some of them, take hundreds of meters before they go horizontal. And so the aerial bombing needs to penetrate that complex, because we need these people to come aground. That's also the importance of the siege on Gaza, so that they can't be resupplied with fuel and with water and electricity, so that they become exhausted and they have to come aground. Because the Hamas terrorists have a decisive advantage operationally when they're inside of their tunnels. And the way that Israel prevents a bloodbath of our forces is by besieging Gaza and by having the kind of bunker buster bombs we require in order to penetrate into the tunnel complex and destroy it in the ground, to bring as many of them up so that we can defeat them.
So there's a new narrative that the media is pushing that Israel might not actually invade because of international support or other questions. Do you see evidence of that, or is this just a strategic measure twice, cut once, so that Hamas can be finished once and for all?
Well, we certainly want to avoid a bloodbath of our soldiers, and we want to win. Prime Minister Netanyahu just gave a speech just 5 minutes ago. It ended. In his announcement, he said that the ground invasion is going to happen. He refused to say when it was going to happen. He obviously didn't want to alert Hamas ahead of time, but he said that that we cannot, that of course we're going in, that there is going to be a ground invasion, and that it's just a matter of our operational considerations. There are other considerations, of course. The Wall Street Journal reporting today that President Biden convinced Israel to delay again before it had to delay because Biden announced that he was coming, and then it had to delay because Biden insisted that we allow resupply of Hamas, that is, don't besiege Gaza under the label humanitarian assistance. But since Hamas controls every square centimeter of Gaza, all anything that goes into Gaza goes to Hamas, and then they can give it out as they wish. Gazans are saying that some of the humanitarian assistance is now being sold at a profit in Gaza's market. So they're gouging prices. So there is no humanitarian assistance getting anywhere. And then the other thing that he's done is he did the humanitarian assistance. And according to the Wall Street Journal, now he's saying, don't go in until we reinforce our positions in the Middle East. And then the Axios publication online said that President Biden, despite full-throated support for Israel and his right to strike Hamas, has methodically and meticulously delayed the expected invasion of Gaza, U.S. officials tell us. So here, too, you have a confirmation from U.S. officials speaking to Axios that this has been their intent. All the same, Israel has its own operational considerations. So I think part of it is international pressure. And insofar as that's concerned, I think it's becoming more and more clear to Israelis that there is no international support for Israeli victory. Not really. I mean, there's lip service, but you hear the hectoring from Biden already at the outset, where he said we have a right to defeat them, we should defeat them, they're worse than ISIS, he said. But then he started hectoring us about international law when it has absolutely no relevance to anything that Israel does. Israel always abides by international law and its operations. But they keep bringing it up as a means to hector Israel and to undermine the legitimacy of what Israel has to do, which is to annihilate Hamas completely.
Yes.
Essentially from the face of the earth.
And they should be. Every single one of them should be killed and hunted down. Every single one. So, Caroline, I have strong opinions on this, and I'm just wondering, kind of from an Israeli perspective, are you starting to feel as if Joe Biden is undermining the Israeli effort, or at least talking out of both sides of his mouth? I certainly feel that way. I'm no fan of Joe Biden. But I'm seeing, for example, he hosted like this comfort room for Muslim extremists in the White House the other day, saying, don't worry, you know, everything's going to be fine. And you and I both know that the quote unquote humanitarian aid is held hostage. They literally hold it hostage over their citizens, and or some of that can be converted into weaponry, piping being one, right? They can turn those into pipe bombs and other things. So is it a growing opinion? And if not, feel free to push back, that Joe Biden is undermining Israel's ability to go after Hamas now that we're 3 weeks in?
I think that there's a growing sense of unease about the American position. Initially, Israelis were very relieved to hear the outpouring of support from Biden and were willing to overlook the glaring problems with a lot of what he was saying, particularly the hectoring all the time about international law. And this, you know, don't allow your passions to get the worst of you. I mean, nobody ever said that to the Americans when after 9/11 or any other thing. So, you know, it's all very obviously hypocritical, but also it's starting to feel it's like a pattern. And so Israelis were very relieved to hear his supportive words. But again, you know, there's this sense, and also they're doing like this Nazi type selection among the hostages. There are 222 hostages being held in Gaza. Some of them, all of them are Israeli, I think, and some of them are dual citizens of the United States, of Russia, of France, and of other countries, Britain. And so they were saying that they would let out people with dual citizenship. So and it's a pernicious thing, right? Because you're saying that Jews who are only Israeli are going to stay in there, and Jews who also have other citizenships may be released. And so that's also exceedingly hostile. And Israelis are feeling revolted by that. So there's a lot of sense of impending dread that Biden is acting out of, you know, speaking out of both sides of his mouth. The humanitarian assistance, such as it is to Gaza, is exceedingly unpopular in Israel. The public is almost universally opposed to it. And the government is really treading on thin ice in terms of public tolerance for any of these efforts to satisfy American demands at our expense, because the Israeli people have a very rare but very, very deep sense of unanimous consent that we have to obliterate Hamas. And the more of these videos that people start to see, the more steeled our will becomes, because it's obvious. I mean, we simply cannot continue to occupy this planet with Hamas living at our doorstep. It's not going to happen. This is an existential threat. And Netanyahu said that this evening. He said he recognizes that his job is to save Israel from destruction, because this is an existential threat. What we saw was not somebody expressing a political opinion. It was somebody enacting a genocide.
Yes.
That their plan, as they write in their covenant, is to annihilate the Jewish people. That's their pledge. And that's what they live by. That's their creed. Their creed is murder. Their creed is mass murder. Their creed is slaughter. They slaughtered their victims like animals, even worse. And we've never seen this kind of bestiality before. I mean, yeah, we have,
I hate to be graphic, but the laws of halal, they actually treat the animals better when they kill them than they treated the Jews before they killed them 2.5 weeks ago. They treat animals better than that. So, Caroline, please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we've had Jews slaughtered in this way over the years in individual terrorist attacks, families slaughtered like this, young women slaughtered like this. But they did this to 1,400 people in one day, in the single largest day of killing Jews since the Holocaust, in a Holocaust level of murder for a day. And so, you know, that's had a shattering impact on the soul of this nation. And so anybody who's trying in any way to undermine our war effort and any acceptance of that undermining by the government is unacceptable to the people of Israel.
I just want to ask, I have full faith that the IDF will be able to defeat Hamas, but then what? What do you recommend from a policy perspective? What comes next? That seems to be a primary concern of, quote unquote, international communities and the media. You've thought through this rather comprehensively. What is your answer to that?
Well, the Palestinians simply cannot be trusted with territory. I mean, I think that's very clear. The Palestinian Authority in Judea and Samaria that everybody wants to give a state to, they joined the jihad officially on Friday. They gave guidance to their preachers in their mosques saying, we want you to call for the Palestinians of Judea and Samaria who live under the authority of the Palestinian Authority, the PLO, to join the jihad against the Jews. So, you know, they're not hiding this. And the Biden administration simply doesn't want to see it because they don't want to accept the fact that Israel must win. But Israel has to win. And we can have some local governments and such, but no more of this. Israel is the only power that can be trusted with any security control over any of these areas ever again.
Caroline Glick, I want people to check out your book, The Israeli Solution, A One-State Plan for Peace in the Middle East. Caroline, we're going to have you back on soon. It's a breaking news day with a lot happening. Anything you'd like to plug in closing here to our audience?
Well, I just suggest, you know, I had a great interview just now with Victor Davis Hanson on the Caroline Glick Show, and I suggest that people check it out. You can read all of my work on carolineglick.com and also at jns.org.
Thank you so much, Caroline. Admire your scholarship, and we need the clarity right now because there's a lot of confusion and the amount of Jew hatred happening
in
the West.
And also, God bless you.
Thank you.
God bless you, Charlie. I remember I met you at the embassy opening here in Jerusalem some years ago. That was a happy day, and I hope to welcome you back in Israel again on another day of joy like that one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be a season of fighting and a season of heaviness, as it says in Ecclesiastes, but we'll have that season of joy again. Caroline, thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop at the pillow. Mike Lindell has created the Giza Dream bed sheets. These sheets look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep, which is crucial for your overall health. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Mike's latest incredible deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you'll receive 50% off the Giza Dream Sheets, marking prices down as low as $29.98, depending on the size. Go to MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk, including the MyPillow 2.0 mattress topper, MyPillow kitchen towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-875-0425 or go to MyPillow.com, use promo code Kirk, MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Mike Johnson is going to be Speaker of the House. He is Speaker of the House, elected as U.S. House Speaker. Excellent question here from Jacob. Charlie, good morning from Phoenix. How did this happen 24 hours ago? We had a Speaker-elect Emmer defeating Johnson behind closed doors. It didn't make it to the floor, and now we have Mike Johnson. Too good to be true question. Why the massive poll shift overnight? Am I really to believe this is down to the grassroots bringing the pressure on him, or are we back to backdoor deals being made? I'm here to actually give you some great news. It's a mixture. Emmer was next in line. Next man in line, and he was the last of the next in line. Think about it. Go next in line, next in line, next in line. You go Emmer. Nope. You go Jordan. Nope. You go Scalise. Nope. And Donald Trump played a huge role in this. Donald Trump came out and savaged Emmer. Boom. Done. Within minutes, Emmer was just over. There was no way forward. Our show went after Emmer. Emmer was just done. He left the room. He said, I've had enough. And the story of Mike Johnson feels very similar to the story of Tyson Bagent, or Bagent. You might say, who is that? Tyson Bagent was a Division II quarterback. So understand how Division II works. It's way, I mean, it's just such a different level. Undrafted free agent, happens to get signed by the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears are terrible this year. They're awful. And so Justin Fields gets hurt, and the backup player, you know, gets hurt. A year ago, Tyson Bagent was playing in front of 2,200 people. And this last Sunday, Tyson Bagent, who never would have dreamed he would be a starting NFL quarterback, started for the Chicago Bears and beat the Las Vegas Raiders by 20 points. He was playing against the Colorado School of Mines. He played for a school I've never heard of, and I've heard of almost every school. I do this for a living. Shepherd University. And now he is going to get a primetime start, most likely. A start in primetime on Sunday Night Football, the biggest of all stage. And boy, is that not the story of Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson was playing Division II football. Mike Johnson was backbenching it, just enjoying his life, doing legislative and policy type, you know, contributions, holding hearings. He had no ambitions to be Speaker of the House, Patrick Mahomes, whatever analogy you want. But sometimes your number is called. They're attacking Mike Johnson, the media, for being an election denier. Great. Threat to democracy. Great. But do you know what else they're also attacking him for? They're attacking Mike Johnson for being woefully inexperienced, which I think is awesome. Bill Kristol, the warmongering neoconservative, has just tweeted out, FYI, Mike Johnson gets an F on the report card for Ukraine. Somebody wake me up. Am I dreaming? Do we have a Speaker of the House that gets a failing grade on Ukraine? Yes. That right there is the now bankrupt Weekly Standards endorsement of Mike Johnson. He gets a very poor F grade when it comes to sending money to foreign pimps in t-shirts while our own border falls apart. All the right people hate him, and he never wanted to be Speaker. He never dreamed of being Speaker. He didn't go to the Chamber of Commerce luncheons and collect business cards of people he could get $2,800 contributions from. He didn't go and travel to the Aspen fundraisers in Kennebunkport or Sun Valley to go to Martha's Vineyard and hang around the $1,000 bottle of wine crowd. He didn't go to Silicon Valley and win favors over the people that are the oligarchs or the masters of the universe. The best leaders are often those who did not want the job. George Washington was like that. The Order of Cincinnatus was built on that entire idea. Go do the job and go home. Mike Johnson is a servant leader. Mike Johnson is begrudgingly becoming Speaker of the House. He'll embrace it with great honor and great weight and great heaviness. Adam Kinzinger is losing his mind on Twitter right now. Losing his mind. Adam Kinzinger, you forgot he led the lawsuit against the election and sparked the whole thing. Losing his mind like a child on Twitter. Mike Johnson is becoming a reluctant hero, and he will let us down on certain things. We don't control every part of Congress, but he will start to change business as usual. And Mike Johnson is not someone that is now Speaker because he always wanted the portrait. I always dreamt of having the Speaker's portrait, that I will be in charge of the House. Mike Johnson kind of wakes up one day, he's like, I'm Speaker? Cool. So let's start to change some things around here. This has the potential to be great. I'm not guaranteeing that it will. This has the potential to be historic. And we can finally change some things in D.C. because you have a Speaker of the House that was the equivalent of a Division II quarterback that stumbled into primetime. And we are behind you, Mr. Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.